down spot, and I got too cute. I hate when I do this. I did this a couple times, and I learned my lesson. So I really like Georgia Tech. That was one of my favorite plays of the week, but the number kept rising. So like when we talked on Friday or on Thursday on my podcast, when we break down all the games, I was like, I really like Georgia Tech, but it's now 8.5, 9.5. Let's pair them up with Louisville in a money line parlay.
Oh boy.
It's like, don't get cute, especially in gambling. Books want you to do parlays.
It's so hard to win a bet. Now you're going to try and win two at the same
Right. It's
time.
just so stupid. Like, it was a dumb play by me. And then I had Washington right, and then Jack Tuttle came into the game, and I got spooked. So I'm like, oh, crap, give me Michigan in game. And I tried to middle it and got that wrong. So it was a, it should, I think, as many of people who are listening who bet, and it was a weekend where I was just texting with a buddy of mine who was like, man, you must have, knowing the way you bet, you must have had a killer weekend. And I was like, it was good, but it should have been so much better. I got cute, I did some stupid stuff, and that's on me. That's where you tap the chest and you're like, ah, that was a dumb play.
Hand up. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into the list. Grizzlies return to the floor. The Jets have a coaching change. We'll also talk about perhaps another plan to save college football. We'll do all that when we come back, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. The Memphis Grizzlies. Yeah, the Memphis Grizzlies won their first preseason game last night at Dallas, 121 to 116. It was also, of course, highlighted by the return to the floor of Ja Morant. Ja Morant also turned an ankle during the contest, left the floor, came back, tweaked it again on a dunk, and then left the floor. We got a shade under 18 minutes of Ja Morant, 13 points, 3 assists, as well as 4 rebounds to go with those 18 minutes. Also, a plus minus of 12 when he's on the floor. So there was a couple of things that I had written down, Tim, that I wanted to discuss with you. Number one, I do think, I mean, we have now reached Matthew Stafford territory. It's like Stafford, if he stays healthy. I do think if Ja Morant stays healthy, I think there's going to be a very quick reminder, oh yeah, this guy's really good.
Yeah, I mean, look, I try to lean on my co-host on VSiN, Jonathan Von Tobel, a lot, and his first bet of the entire offseason over the summer was Memphis, I think, to win the title at like 35 or 40 to 1 or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, if Ja Morant's healthy, man, as everyone listening knows, Captain Obvious here, I mean, this is a top four team in the West, if not better.
So the other things that kind of stood out, because they are at least, who you choose to believe, they're either implementing a new offense or they're at least adding wrinkles to their offense. They clearly last night played at a breakneck pace, a pace that would have been number one in the league. How sustainable is that? I don't know. But there were a couple of things that at least were noteworthy. The Grizzlies did shoot 36.6% from the field. Who the heck knows whether or not that is a result of the offense, whether or not that's just a sample size. It's a one-game preseason game, not going to overreact. But this would be the key. If the Grizzlies shot 36.6%, basically putting them at league average, that would be the best that they've shot from three since 2006, 2007. So if you could just get up to league average, that does, I think, make them a better team. Again, a lot of sample size on that. Also, a lot of the makes came from the bench, and there's the question of how many of those guys are actually going to play. The starters were not nearly as good from three, but that was at least something that if that trend continued, and there was at least some logic behind it, and that with the new pace, they were getting more open threes, and if you're more likely to hit an open three than you are to hit a contested three. And this is the one that I did want to discuss with you. So obviously, a huge part of the Grizzlies, no pun intended, is going to be Zach Edey. And what we saw from Zach in summer league, albeit very short, it was encouraging. And I thought a lot of the discussion on Edey is kind of, it's a straw man. Like, if the question were going to be, is Zach Edey going to be an all-NBA player? Well, that's not really what the Grizzlies drafted him for. The Grizzlies drafted for a specific need, and they need him to get rebounds, they need him to set screens, and they need him to be an additional rim protector that allows Jaren Jackson to be at his best. The knocks, of course, against him are going to be, you know, can he, if he's drawn out from outside the basket, how can he defend? I did think last night, if you were an Edie hater, there were some clips that you could get, and at times he had trouble keeping up with Lively, and, you know, Lively's much more athletic than he is. Got into some foul trouble. Did not start the third quarter. So, you know, to me, like, this is the classic, like, I'm taking a preseason pledge. I'm not overreacting, but I am very interested to see, like, I do think a big question, I'm someone who's very high on Edie, but I do think a big question is, how well can he stay on the floor? It's also important to note that Jaren wasn't out there either, and so I think it's going to be easier for him to stay on the floor with Jaren behind him.
Yeah, my biggest worry would be what we saw last night, which was the foul trouble. And, you know, if teams try to take advantage of him just using quickness and he has to kind of make up for it and you know, reach down and stuff like that. I will say, though, if you watched him at Purdue, he's not your normal plotting 7'4 dude. Like, he's huge, and he very much benefited from being bigger than everybody. But he's got stamina, man. Painter worked his butt, so he could stay out there.
He's also very skilled. We did see a Ja to Edie lob, and that's what everybody's been wanting to see, because I do think that's another big part of it. They're asking him to basically replicate the Steven Adams role, and except I think he gives you a little bit more on the offensive end, and that's a huge part of it. So, again, I'm not going to massively overreact to preseason. It was also a very sloppy game for the Grizzlies turnover-wise. They had 23. How much of that is trying to run at the pace that they were? How much of that is, you know, Dallas is built on defense, but Dallas wasn't playing nearly, like, you know, Klay didn't play, Klay, Luka, Kyrie didn't play. I don't even think P.J. Washington played. So, you know, to me, it's like, all right, these are just kind of things I'm watching. I care way more about the first 10 to 15 games, kind of seeing, you know, what we're going to, whether or not there's actual changes, whether or not this is tweaks. I'm interested about that. All right, Robert Salah. So we have our first coach firing. He was nowhere near, was he near the top of the list? Odds-wise, this was an upset, right?
He was like 9-1 or something like that. I mean, the favorite to be the first fired
was McCarthy, right?
No, as of a week ago was Doug Peterson.
Okay. Yeah,
Jacksonville.
Yeah. Yeah, oh boy. Imagine if the Colts could have pulled that comeback off. That would be interesting. So we find out.
That's why numbers are important, people. 2.5 is better than 3.5.
We found out this morning that he had been let go. Shefty let us know that, and I think it was like right when I went to the air, like 9 a.m. I thought this was a fun fact. Salah becomes the third NFL coach to be fired after losing a game in London, according to ESPN research. The Raiders fired Dennis Allen in 2014, the day after they lost 38-14 to the Miami Dolphins at Wembley, while the Dolphins fired Joe Philbin the day after they lost to the Jets 27-14 at Wembley. Salah's firing comes 2 days after the Jets lost 23-17 to the Minnesota Vikings, not at Wembley, but of course at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. This also was an interesting note to me as well. Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports reports that Salah was considering firing offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett in the wake of the team's loss to the Vikings in Week 5. Passing game coordinator Todd Downing would have likely been the choice to replace Hackett. So we've gotten I am very curious. Our girl Rossini's going to get the tell-all, right?
On Salah?
Yeah. The throwing people under the bus.
Yeah.
That's going to be the expose. So I can't wait to read that. Nobody does that better than The Athletic. The post-mortem at The Athletic is absolutely as good as it gets. But I know, like, the initial reports were this had nothing to do with Rodgers. Seems like it was the obvious. Has everything to do with Rodgers.
Well, Woody Johnson apparently said he's been contemplating this for, like, 3 days. Or, for, like, 2 years. I don't believe you.
Now, I'm also in the camp. I never had the Salah gene. I always thought he was massively overrated. I always just got extreme defensive coordinator, not head coach vibes. He was the guy that, you know, all he would want to talk about is how good his defense was and how the offense was bad. I'm not saying Zach Wilson was good, but the things that they would ask him to do, it was just unfair. It's like, it was almost like it was a self-fulfilling prophecy trying to get the offense to be bad just to prove a point. Whereas you look at some of the other coaches that have taken projects, like, yeah, I know he didn't play great on Sunday, but like, look at what Tomlin has done with Justin Fields. Like, they've had success. What Kevin O'Connell's been able to do with Sam Darnold. Like, we have plenty of examples of coaches that have taken the kind of the trash, the scrap heap, if you will, and gotten some production out of it. The Jets never did that.
This whole thing is so dysfunctional, and it's really hilarious. I mean, Nathaniel Hackett has got to be one of the worst offensive coordinators ever. Some of his play calling decisions over in London were just an absolute train wreck. Rodgers.
Well, then there's always the question, like, what is he actually? Like, what is he actually calling? What is he even sending in?
I mean, I don't know about you, but like, I still think back to Hard Knocks and how ridiculous that whole thing was. Like, they were drooling over Rodgers when he came in. It was the most bizarre situation where you had the D coordinator talking about, they were watching film. And he was like, hey, this is pretty good defense, but hey, we've got the only quarterback who can make this throw. And it was like Hackett being out there, being buddy-buddy with him. You know, it was, I don't know about you, that Hard Knocks, and now it's easy for me to say when it's revisionist history, but you knew it wasn't going to work.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was actually a good season of Hard Knocks because the world according to Aaron Rodgers is interesting. But in terms of like a documentary, air quotes, I mean, I think the thing that is actually fascinating to me is forever, the idea of getting the past his prime quarterback to save, you know, a good roster and get him over the hump, it didn't have a great track record. But it is amazing that like once Brady did it, and won a COVID Super Bowl, like everyone was like, oh, this is a game changer. Like, we normally would have been just as skeptical of this as we are anytime it happens. But it's almost like Brady doing it once just completely changed everyone's mindset.
Well, Peyton did it too.
Yeah, but Peyton's was a little different. Peyton's still kind of, after the surgery.
Well, Peyton won the MVP out there. And then they got boat raced by Seattle in the Super Bowl. Was that his first or second year?
I believe that was the second year. Because I think the first year, he also had like an MVP-type year, but I think that's when the Ravens beat him. The Ravens beat them.
Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah.
Or not the, the Jacoby Jones.
Yeah, Jacoby Jones.
And then they built up the defense, and his neck failed Correct. Him. But then they were so ridiculous on defense that they were able to win the Super Bowl. I mean, now too, I mean, he's not as washed up. As old, but like you look at what's happening in Atlanta, like are they going to win the division? How deep are they going to go with an older veteran quarterback? But I mean, how does this end? Like, how does this end in New York?
I keep thinking he's going to retire this year.
Rodgers?
Yeah.
I mean, he contemplated it 15 times when he was in Green Bay, didn't he?
Yeah. I think the difference though this time is I think his mind is still there, and I think his arm is still good enough. I think what we're seeing now is he like physically can't move around like he used to. It's very similar. I get whiffs of the end of Eli, because at the end of Eli, the arm was still there, but he was just so immobile that it just wasn't tenable. That's what I think Rodgers is coming to grips with. And like, even if you think about it, the end with Brady, like forget the Super Bowl year, but like think about like that last year. Like, remember, as soon as like he'd see one person win a block on the pass rush, like he'd throw the ball in the dirt. Like, he was just so avoiding hits and whatnot. Like, it just screams to me that he's just going to go do something else.
Run for vice president?
I mean, maybe he gets the campaign ready for what? For 2028?
Yeah, 28.
I mean.
Well, he wanted to be the host of Jeopardy. He did that a couple times, right? A couple off seasons ago.
I feel like 95% of his persona is him wanting us to believe he's smart.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Is he ever going to, like...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, like, what is his next move? I would not be so... I don't know what that dude's next move is.
I mean, there's not a TV spot.
Nah. I think he's too smart for TV in his mind.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, like, goes, like, and partners with McAfee, and they start their own brand or something.
Adam, I'm curious what he...
I also feel like we could get, like, a decade of what life's like without football and learning how amazing it is. I could see that.
Yeah.
All right, quickly, let's talk this new Super League. So it's Project Rudy. Here's the thing. And you tell me if you think I'm overestimating this or maybe underestimating this. Until I see some plan that involves the SEC or the Big Ten, I'm just not allowing myself to get all that wrapped up into it. And one of the key details in Ross Dellinger's story, which is fabulous over at Yahoo Sports, on some of these things, like, there had been SEC and Big Ten involvement, and then the last hour it goes away. I take note of that.
I need people who don't like our sport to stay away.
Yeah, but this has been my complaint for like the last 15 years.
And I've been okay with, I don't like it, but I've been understanding to realignment. And to be honest, because of realignment, we've got Oregon, Ohio State. We had Michigan, USC. We are going to have Texas, Georgia. Like, I'm cool with that. This would suck. Like, I don't love what we've seen. I don't love that the Pac-12's gone away, but everyone's still around. But if we're making it would.
With private equity money.
I don't know if it would ruin the sport, but it would almost ruin the sport.
It just, I don't know. It wouldn't have a good feel. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Ken Wisenhunt, new head coach of the Memphis Showboats. He's going to join the program. We'll talk to him next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Please now to welcome into the studio the new head coach of the Memphis Showboats, of course, of the USFL, former head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, as well as the Tennessee Titans, longtime NFL assistant. He is, of course, Ken Wisenhunt, kind enough to join us in studio. Tickets will go on sale 1 week from today. You can also check out three-time defending champion, the Birmingham Stallions, as well as the Michigan Panthers, Houston Roughnecks, Arlington Renegades, and the St. Louis Battlehawks. They'll all be playing this year at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. Ken, we're not calling it the Liberty Bowl anymore, not for just legal reasons. It's also half of it's gone, so we're calling it the Liberty Hole.
That's what I hear. I haven't seen it yet, but hey, whatever we call it, we just got to show up and play, right?
That is more... We're also very grateful that Fox came in because they actually were able to allow us to flip the sides where the TV cameras were, so that made the stadium look better. So we're very thankful the USFL came in. But I think let's start right there. How... You know, when you go from last year, I believe you were at Alabama,
right,
with Nick Saban. Now we're back in, we're getting into the USFL. How does that whole process go about?
You know, it's an interesting one, just from the standpoint of where I was. You know, I being around those guys in college football, it gets you excited about playing. But there's a great many of them that haven't, I guess, mastered their tasks of where they are. So this is a league where guys that maybe weren't ready to play or guys that are still learning to play can get an opportunity to maybe move to the next level, and you get a good brand of football with that.
Well, I think that's kind of one of the more interesting aspects that I've kind of watched, whereas I don't know how much it has to do with you know, transfer portal, guys not staying at schools long, guys now, the high-level recruits that you got to get them on the field sooner. Is there a void right now in football between college and the NFL for development? Because to me, it seems like when you're watching the NFL right now, it feels like a lot of guys maybe are not quite as developed as they once were. And I don't know if that's anecdotal or if that's just I'm wrong.
No, well, I think to your point that is a little bit of it. You know, there is a greater disparity now, I think, coming into the league just because of, if you go back years and years ago in college football, you know, every day there was an individual period and you were working on technique and you were working on double team blocks, you were working on coverage, you were working on different things defensively where you got to learn how to play it. And now, especially because of RPOs and because one of the things in college football is go fast. When you go fast, a lot of those things are kind of covered up, or you know, it goes under the table because you know you're going to have some errors. So a lot of these guys, a lot of these players, when they come out, are not prepared for what the NFL is, because you have to play technique because you're going against some of the best players in the world, obviously. But if you don't step the right foot, if you don't put your hands in the right spot, they're going to beat you, and you know that's going to make it tough on you to make a team. So you know, one of what this is, and this goes all the way back to my son-in-law. Years ago, he was a player for us in Tennessee, quarterback, Zach Mettenberger. Good player. Played a little bit in the NFL.
He was the offensive coordinator of, I called the MUS game. He's the offensive coordinator at Ryan Father Ryan last week.
Yeah, he did a great job. He's doing a great job.
Yes, he did.
I think he's, you know, he's now got it. The wake-up factor of what he's gotten, understanding how to do it, how you prepare, how you look at it. You know, he's been forced to do that because he was out of the league, but he came to the spring leagues where he tried to get better so he would get an opportunity to get back in it, because his play, while he's always been talented, you know, one of the things is you have a short time to really make it in the NFL, and if you're not consistent and you're not as good as they perceive you to be, then sometimes it's hard to get in. So where is there a training ground where you can go and play and get better with the hopes of continuing your aspirations of playing into the NFL? And, you know, I watched this last year, and there's good ball in it, and there's good learning in it. So, you know, I'm excited about the opportunity to coach guys. I'm excited about the opportunity to, you know, with the knowledge that we've acquired over the years and the people that we know, help these guys realize their dream of getting back to the NFL or playing professional football. And for some of these guys, it's just a great opportunity to compete and continue to get better.
Well, it's fascinating that you mentioned with Zach, because I'm an MUS alum, and back-to-back weeks we played Innsworth, who's now has the Hasselbecks coaching, and Father Ryan has Zach running their offense. It's back-to-back weeks in which I've watched high schools huddle, and I was like, wait a minute, what? Because normally I feel like the training ground of the RPO and fast tempo, all of it's high school, but now it's fascinating to me, and they both have extremely efficient offenses, and they're very well-polished, but it was to watch guys huddle, to watch guys have formations that made sense and whatnot. Like, it was something that kind of took me by surprise, because I just haven't seen it covering high school football now for the last 10 years. But it almost feels like we're kind of going back to, hey, there are some principles and fundamentals of football that maybe we've lost.
That's true. But in looking at it as an outsider, or looking at it from the outside, I should say, you know, you got to be successful when you do that. Because if you don't, then everybody's going to say, why are you doing that? But you know, the one thing that I would say is, you know, it's a tough enough sport without getting the technique work that you need. That's one of the biggest things. And, you know, maybe when you get to college and you know, I heard Coach Saban say it last year, the way to be successful in a lot of times in college is to go fast, go fast, go fast. And I just watched him work guys defensively so hard on technique, you know, where they were supposed to be, how they communicate. And that takes practice. That takes guys getting together and actually working hard and, you know, even sometimes slowing it down so you can see how the things fit, how they fit the blocks, how they coverage downfield, you know, which prepares you for that. Because I think what people don't understand is how fast, you know, I remember when I came out of college football when I came out of high school football and I played college football, it was like, wow, you know, the step up, it was a lot faster. But let me tell you something, when you go from college to the NFL, that's way faster than that. It's a hard thing to adjust to, especially, you know, for linemen, for interior linemen, for linebackers, for guys where you're having to fit up against guys that are big and strong and learn how to use your technique. So, you know, I feel like this is this, and this is what I'm intrigued about. This gives us a chance to work with these guys, especially coaches that know what it's like to be at the next level in a lot of places, where you can say, okay, look, this is what you got to do to get better. You've been there. Now, if you want to get back to it, you got to improve your technique, got to improve your footwork. You know, you got to make sure on your route depths as a receiver that you're getting there, and you got to make sure that, you know, when you come out of your cut, you're not chopping your feet too much because the DB is going to see you do it. And, you know, I think it's a great place for quarterbacks because now you get a chance to actually get technical work and compete, you know. So it can be a good level of football. It can be exciting, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to help some guys move along as we go forward.
Well, I think that's kind of an interesting aspect of it with quarterback play in particular because, you know, now we see six quarterbacks go in the first round. No one gets drafted, I believe, then until Spencer Rattler in the sixth round. But now there's all this pressure, with the exception of maybe Michael Penix, because, you know, and JJ gets hurt, but Michael Penix has Cousins in front of him. But we now have this rush to, it's almost like, how fast can you get the quarterbacks on the field? The Patriots even announced today they're going to Drake May. Do you think we are doing a disservice to some of these guys by getting them on the field as soon, you know, as soon as possible? Whereas, you know, it felt like, you know, oftentimes I get it with the contract structure being different from the draft now, where it used to be, you know, Eli gets 7 years or whatnot, so you could be a little bit more patient. The fact that it feels like there's more rush to get these guys on the field, is that doing a disservice to quarterback play throughout the NFL?
Well, I think it makes it difficult. You know, once again, a lot of it depends on where you come from, as you're talking about a college program, and what your skills are, how they've been addressed. I know, as a coach who's gone on the road and worked with these guys, you know, it was a big deal to the organizations that I've been with that you get as much information on these guys about how they process, what they're looking at, you know, how they actually see the game, and can they do that? Can they take that and transfer it to the next level where it goes a little bit faster? And a lot of times, you know, once again, in college, because you have such little time with the players where you can meet, where you can actually go over the practical stuff as far as reading a coverage or reading a play or progressing a play, they're not getting a lot of that work. So, you know, anytime you can get into an environment where you can use that, a lot of times the reason a lot of these guys fail is because they're thrown into it and you don't have the time or the patience in the NFL to wait for them to grow or to get there. Because if you don't, if you're the coach and that's going on and he's not playing well, then you're not going to be around. So, you know, it's got to be one of those things where you got to really work hard with these guys and hope that they have some background, and especially when you're talking about drafting them or acquiring these guys, that they have some background as to how things work and how well they can process, you know. So it's tough. I mean, when you see some of the things defenses can do in the NFL as far as, you know, disguising coverages, how they bring pressures, you know, dropping a defensive end that can run underneath the flat and catch it, you know, those are things you don't see every day when you're practicing or even playing in college football. And, you know, that's where when you get an opportunity as much as you can to be prepared for those things, it can help them.
Is there any other position in sports that is as difficult to evaluate as the quarterback? Because to me, it seems like what makes it difficult is there clearly some physical element. You have to have a certain amount of arm strength, or you have to have certain tools, but tools are not the overall barometer of success or whatnot. But then you have a mental makeup and whatnot. Like, I just cannot imagine if my entire livelihood depends on making the right call on a quarterback. Like, I can have opinions on guys that I like, guys that I don't, but is there any science to it at all?
You know, I guess it really depends on your philosophy of what you think quarterback play is and what you're going to put on a quarterback to do. You know, I think that it is something that is important. And I've heard many people say, if you could evaluate quarterbacks, you know, and do it consistently, you could make a lot of money, because it is very hard to evaluate college quarterbacks coming out a lot of times. You got to spend time with them. You got to actually sit in a room with them and talk about how they see things, and then even try to test them on, you know, what happens with this, what happens with that. It's one of the things that we used to do is ask them, okay, your best play of the year, what was it? And when they would tell you, you'd say, okay, when did this happen? You know, I've had quarterbacks go, well, that was in the second quarter. I think we were up by five. I know we were at this point in the field. And those are the guys that you say, okay, they've got a chance because they can process information and then they can actually know where to go with it. But then do they have the talent to get the ball there? You know, a lot of times guys are really good with that part of it.
But I know where to go with the ball, but getting it there is another thing.
Being able to make that throw that some of these guys make, then you know, you walk the fine line between that. But, you know, ultimately the guys that can find the way to be successful, they're the ones that, you know, from a standpoint of preparing and understanding what it takes, they're the ones that have success. I mean, Patrick Mahomes took a little bit of time getting started, but, you know, he figured it out. And he was a talented player coming out, and, you know, he's doing really well now. And there's some young guys like Jaden Daniels, who is, you know, that way. You could tell from watching him play when he was at Arizona State, you know, he did some good things. Now, that's great to see him make some plays when he's there. But what you really want to do is get in there and see how does he think? How does he process? Because, you know, there's a lot that goes on in the NFL and disguising coverages, disguising defenses. Those guys are good. You know, they'll give you a zone coverage look and play you man, or you know, they're going to play man on this and then they'll play a drop zone. So it's difficult, and you got to understand how to do it. And the more time that you get, or the better prepared you are, the better chance that you have.
We're talking with Ken Wisenhunt, the new head coach of the Memphis Showboats. Again, tickets for the Showboats will go on sale for everyone October the 15th. Make sure you go check those out. What can we expect from your team? What do we have a philosophy yet? Do we even know the roster yet?
Well, no, that's still a little bit in flux going, but I think that, you know, we got Jim Munoz, who's our GM, who I really like. We think a lot about how you want to acquire players and what you want to do with them, and I think obviously we want to get a good quarterback. That's something that's important. But, you know, our philosophy is definitely the type of player that we like, the one that we want, are the guys that work hard, you know, that want to be there, that are willing to put in the work. That's what you really, really want to see. So I feel good about where we are as far as our vision going forward. And, you know, I'm excited to be able to acquire some players that I think will let us have a good team.
Is this a different challenge in the sense of there's obviously a competitive aspect of this, and you want to win, but then there is also a development, help these guys move on. Does that change the way that you would normally coach a team, or is it just, hey, let's figure out a way to win games and then the development will occur?
Well, I think that's the second part of what you said is more to your point. I really like the idea of being able to help these guys develop, but let's don't make any mistake about it. It's about winning the game, right? I don't care if you're developing great and you look like you've got it. You know, if you have a guy that you know can make that throw, or that can make that check, or the guy that can make that guy miss in the open field, that's who you got to make sure you're getting ready to play. And, you know, that's what this is all about. So, you know, we're going to get some guys in here, and we'll see if we can, how quickly they develop. But, you know, that's really what it's all about. You got to be able to make those plays in the critical times when it comes up.
Ken, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
That is Ken Wisenhunt, the new head coach of the Memphis Showboats. Again, tickets on sale October the 15th. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more football. We'll also tell your story when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company. 92.9 FM, ESPN. October is Golftober at Birdies. You can book online and enjoy half off standard golf rates. Now's the time to book your holiday party or event at Birdies, because the dates are already filling up. But as long as you book in Golftober, you are guaranteed the Golftober rates. So you get half off even if your event is happening in November or December. Also, if you're a golf instructor and you're in need of a facility to carry on your lessons throughout the fall and winter months, DM Birdies at Birdies901 on Instagram for info on how you can start using Birdies as your instructional facility that can benefit both you and your students during the off season. Golf at Birdies.com for more information. Also, check out the membership options. $100 a month gets you 10 hours on their simulators. You also get special discounts and more. Golf at Birdies.com at Birdies901. Tim rejoins the program. We're about 17 minutes away from Phillies and Mets. We had the Tigers and Guardians yesterday. We also had the Royals and the Yankees. I believe now that means every series has gone back to Game 3, tied up at 1. Is that right? Do we have Tim?
It helps if I put up my microphone.
Ah, there you go.
My bad. I turned it down to make sure I didn't sneeze.
Happens to the best of us. Well, we didn't want your boy snoring.
Well, I had my dog snoring in the beginning of the show, and then I just, you know, didn't want to mess with that. Yes, 1-1 all four series, and yesterday Tarik Skubal was absolutely unbelievable for the Detroit Tigers, and then you get a 3-run shot in the top of the ninth inning. So you've got some Dodgers Padres drama. Don't throw your baseball into our dugout going on. Nothing more baseball than something stupid like that. But
I do like how that series has bad blood.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Jurickson Profar robbing home run, the home run he robbed on, is that on Saturday?
Sunday, I think. Yeah, Sunday.
Sunday.
I think it was like basically during, I was watching that while we were in the delay for Sunday Night Football.
It was incredible. Yeah, I had my day. Yeah, and he just, so there's definitely bad blood there. Walker Buehler starts today for the Dodgers. He's been a disaster since coming back from injury. So, yeah, you got a lot going on in these series, man. It's got some good ones, I think, brewing here. And if the Yankees could lose, that wouldn't stink.
Did Kwan catch that ball in left field yesterday in the Guardians-Tigers game? Because at first glance, I was like, there's no way. It bounced. But then when I saw the replay, you can talk me into it hit his like the leather of his glove, and that was the bounce.
I thought he made it.
Yeah, it was nice to see that didn't matter. Like, in the end, oh boy, Carpenter, that was a different sound. That when you hear like that kind of home run, that's a different crack of the bat. All right, quickly before we get out of here, we continue our, what is it, 50? How many straight days of football do we have?
I think it's like 55, 56, something like that.
We've got our first ever Tuesday night CUSA, FIU at Liberty. I think this line has danced all around. I believe it's under 17 now, correct?
16 and a half, yep.
I kind of want to play with fire. I kind of want to take the points with FIU.
I almost feel like you let FIU score a bunch because this is what Liberty does, and then you bet Liberty.
Then you bet Liberty live.
Yeah. yeah, man. I mean, the Fighting Pit Bulls, they'll be wearing their Miami Vice uniforms, I think, in a couple of weeks. I have a bet, a futures parlay with Liberty and the Chiefs to win the AFC West. So the Chiefs are now minus 1,600 to win the AFC West. But Liberty keeps messing around, man. Like, the other day, they were, like, plus money to win the CUSA. They're not as big of a lock as maybe we anticipated them to take care of business there. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's part of me that wants Liberty to lose at some point, so we just don't even have to
be done with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, who else, though, right now? Jacksonville State has, like, a...
Sam Houston doesn't stink.
Yeah, that's true.
They beat Texas State.
Kiss is a bad league.
It is a very bad league.
We can now tell your story. We can hit the music. All right. Instead of this week going with Hugh Freeze, we'll go with Peyton Thorne. Did you happen to catch this clip that was going around social media today? So if you don't know, on Saturday there was a 4th-and-1 that's not successful. Hugh Freeze claims that Peyton Thorne checked the play. And today, on the Next Round Live, the former JOX guys that do a great job in Birmingham, well, they had Peyton on, and Peyton got to tell his side of the story. And he said, I won't get into too much of it. I could explain what happened, but I don't think that would help the team, so I'll keep that one in-house. He then continued, I will say, I did not check any play. Things are going great. Things are going great. I can safely say I have witnessed Hugh Freeze say that he said something to a quarterback, and then I asked the quarterback, he said he never told me anything. Not that he didn't say that. It was like he never said anything. It's only getting better. Deuce,
they lose at Missouri, right?
I mean,
Missouri. By the way, Missouri with the weirdest game of the college football season. They are at UMass this weekend.
Yeah. All right, buddy. We'll talk to you on Friday.
All right. See you, man.
That, of course, is Tim Murray of VSiN. I want to thank Ken Wisenhunt for being in studio. If you missed anything, you'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show's coming up next.